Live from Hütteldorf, we've got Carvajal's clinical finishing for Klagenfurt. We've got Sturm taking a 4-point lead at the top of the table. Salzburg slip up at home again, and Austria qualify for Euro 2024. Hello and welcome to the Other Bundesliga podcast. It is lovely to be back. We are here with you in Rapid's Allianz Stadion in the west of Vienna. We've just watched SK Rapid 2, Austria Klagenfurt 3. So we'll start by talking about that. My name is Tom Midler. I'm joined by Lee Wingate. Lee, have you enjoyed today's match?
Yes. I mean, it was very interesting, but I'm still struggling to really grasp how Rapid let it slip out of their hands, really. They looked so in control, so dominant for large swathes of that game. There were plenty of chances for them to, you know, put it to bed before they did. And then that balmy period in the second half with three goals for Klagenfurt, Rapid rally a little bit at the end. And you think, well, maybe there's a chance, but it was just too little too late. And, you know, the ground's empty around us now already. There were boos at the final whistle. It's safe to say it's not gone down well.
No, it hasn't been a great day for Rapid. And we came here full of optimism for an exciting game because obviously Klagenfurt were 1 point ahead in the table. Peter Packelt, former Meister trainer, the man who won the league with Rapid many moons ago, he's worked wonders at Austria Klagenfurt. We know that. They were ahead in the table. They're up in the top six, playing really good football. But for about an hour of this game, it was pretty much all Rapid. The first half was as dominant as I've seen them against a good team for quite a long time. It was 1-0. It was Burgstaller after his cult cameo national team run out last week, which we'll talk about a little later in the pod. We thought we'd start with Bundesliga and Rapid in particular, as we're right here, right now. But Burgstaller took, 11 minutes to get back on the score sheet after coming back from injury. It was all perfect. He scored in front of the block west. Like, it couldn't have been a better start. And in the first half, Klagenfurt offered nothing. I don't remember really any attacks, any shots, any chances. And that continued into the early stages of the second half. And I was just thinking to myself, do you know what? The best thing that Klagenfurt have done in this game is remain just 1-0 down. Like, they're still in with a chance of something. They're a quality team. You never know. They might grab a goal from somewhere. And lo and behold, they did, from a source of many goals this season.
Yeah, I think you're right about that staying in the game thing, because if you look at Klagenfurt's scorelines, generally I feel like they don't get thrashed. I can think of one exception over the past few seasons. I think they lost 6-0 to Salzburg a couple of years ago. But otherwise, they tend to be hard to beat, hard to finish off. And as you say, they just stayed in it. And the quality that Sinan Carvajal has, we know about that. He's top of the scoring charts now with 7 goals. He's lethal in front of goal. 2 finishes today. If we talk about the first one first, left-footed, low, into the corner. The next one, right-footed, into the top corner. And it was just sensational, wasn't it? The way that ball was played through. And we said during the game that the XG on this is low. Like, that is not an easy chance. He's beaten the goalkeeper at the near post, into the roof of the net, off the bar, I think it was. Fantastic goal. And then Aaron Schwartz comes off the bench, and that wasn't a bad goal either, was it? They were all, you know, not from close range, these goals. They really earned the goals they scored.
Yeah, I was just hopping off down the stairs, about to go to the loo, and you were like, oh, don't worry, I'll keep note of anything that happens. And then I turn around just before I go, and Aaron Sky Schwartz is just like curling that low shot in at the far post. I think at that point, Rapid had something like 8 shots, or maybe more. Austria Klagenfurt had 5, all 5 of which had been on target, and 3 of them had ended up basically unsavable. I don't really put Hedl down as being at fault for any of the goals. They were just all right in the corners of the goal. What about that efficiency? You know, if Klagenfurt have that, apparently they do, what's going wrong at Rapid? Why can you play well for 60 minutes of a game, be so far on top, and then suddenly, in the blink of an eye, find yourself 3-1 down, and at that point, the game and the points had gone? I was thinking about Rapid in the live table going fourth. In the end, you know, a few minutes later, that was out of the window, and Klagenfurt instead were in fourth, and you'd have to say they deserve it, I suppose. But it seems like a familiar story somehow for Rapid, a performance full of promise. They didn't come and play badly today. They just weren't good enough for a small period of the game, and the other team took ruthless advantage of it.
I'm sure that the tactical analysts out there might say this is too reductive, but chance conversion has definitely got to be one of the factors that explains this, because there were chances for Rapid. There were not, you know, millions of them, but there were some decent ones. There was the one in particular in the first half for Nicholas Kuhn, which went just wide. And, you know, you mentioned it there. Klagenfurt had a few chances. They took them. I also would just, you know, want to highlight Klagenfurt's discipline as well, because to stay in the game for that long when Rapid were on top, they were just constantly moving as a unit. Positional discipline was great, fighting for every ball. And I think there's just a real steel and a real belief there now. I think Peter Packard has instilled that they just, they refuse to accept when they're beaten. And on the flip side, you've got a Rapid side that, you know, I think they've won 3 games 5-0 this season. So they either seem to win 5-0 or things go wrong. And, you know, listeners to this podcast will probably be, if you're of a Rapid persuasion, you'll probably be annoyed at hearing me or us say this. But it's just so frustrating, isn't it? Like, they're such a frustrating team to watch. They should be doing better than this.
Yeah, another example today. They easily could have come away with a win or at least a point, and it's just another one that's gotten the way somehow. But to look at the stats, you talked about Rapid's chance conversion. They've scored 22 times. Only Salzburg can beat that in the league after 11 games with 24. But as you mentioned, we've said it before, there's been a couple of heavy victories for Rapid that maybe sway those numbers mm-hmm. somewhat. But they've got the highest XG in the league, almost four goals higher on XG than Salzburg, 25.7. So they're well out in front on that metric. And they've got the highest shots on target per match, 6.5. Again, almost a full shot on target ahead of anyone else in the games. Highest on biggest chances created, again by quite a large margin. Highest also on big chances missed. Mm. So it's a bit of everything, isn't it? But I think there is a feeling that underneath here somewhere, underneath this Rapid team, they've got the elements that it would take to be successful. We saw how much they missed Burgstaller when he was out with injury and suddenly the goals dried up. But it's not just Burgstaller and it can't just be him. He can't be their only solution. There's something else. There's a few missing pieces in this puzzle. But the frustrating thing is there's definitely a good side underneath there somewhere. Let's move on to the other Bundesliga action, because we've seen an exciting game today.
The other Bundesliga action.
Because there were some other very exciting matches this weekend. This was a big game, a good game, but there were other games that perhaps had even more riding on them, including Salzburg against LASK, a Styrian derby as well between Sturm Graz and Hartberg. I'll let you pick, Lee. Start with whichever one of those that you want.
We could tackle them both at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Because they were played at the same time. And, you know, you looked at the live scores after a matter of minutes and it was Salzburg 0, LASK 0. And it was Sturm Graz 0, Hartberg 1. And we've talked about Hartberg quite a bit on the pod this season for punching above their weight and overachieving. And we saw them play so well, didn't we, in Wolfsburg a few weeks ago. But Sturm just hit back so quickly in that one with those goals from Jatter. I think, you know, the defending, not brilliant from Hartberg. I think that's a fair assessment. And then the second one, Alexander Prass just seemed to sort of waltz through and find himself in plenty of space. And then that picture changes, because now Sturm are winning and Salzburg are still drawing. And that, you know, obviously did not last. We've tweeted already about the sort of historical nature of this game for Salzburg, because they went on to lose 1-0 to LASK. And as you said, Tom, this is the first time since 2014 that they've lost back-to-back league home games. The goal came from Robert Zuhl, and it was pretty well worked, wasn't it? I don't think there was too much wrong with Salzburg, apart from maybe a few aerial battles that weren't dealt with properly. But the goal was nicely worked. And then you have the situation flipped around where Sturm are winning and Salzburg are losing, and it stayed like that. And I think that's the thing that surprised me the most, because I always just felt Salzburg would come back into it.
Yeah, you've got four teams there with Salzburg, LASK, Sturm and Hartberg, all of whom were doing very well by their own respective standards, especially, you know, maybe other than Salzburg, who are tracking a little bit lower than their extremely high expectations right now. But you've got four very good teams there at the top end of the table. Hartberg have given Sturm problems on numerous occasions. That East Styrian derby, or the Styrian derby, sorry, against the East Styrians, Hartberg, that's been a trouble spot for Sturm. And I thought, oh, here we go again. Christoph Lang putting them 1-0 up, Hartberg, and he's a lone player from SK Sturm, of course, so his celebrations were rather muted. Got a nice kiss on the cheek from somebody.
Yeah.
You noticed that, didn't you?
Yeah.
In the sort of pylon after the goal. But yeah, Lang, who's been excellent, scored against Sturm. And it's one of those things you think, in the long run, it's probably a good thing for Sturm because they've got another really excellent player. He's just been brilliant for Hartberg this season on loan. But as you said, crucially, they turned it around quickly. They never panicked. Sidi Yatta on his first start in the Bundesliga for Sturm, getting the goal. As you say, Hartberg maybe a little frustrated with some of the defending. A couple of balls ricocheting in Sturm's direction and Press poked in for 2-1 and they were home and dry. They got the job done. But Lask in Salzburg, I thought this was a really excellent Lask performance. There have been questions asked of them a little bit this season under Thomas Sagida. Hasn't gone brilliantly for them in Europe, but I think quietly, after a bit of an inauspicious start to life in the Bundesliga under Sagida, quietly they've just been going about turning things upwards, and now with that win, Jules with a smart finish, as you said, a little bit standoffish, the defending from Salzburg a couple of times. You mentioned the aerial battles. I thought a couple of times there were challenges that weren't really made, and not for the first time this season, Salzburg just hesitated. They've always got players in the right place, so two or three players around the last player on the ball, and nobody really knew which one was supposed to pull the trigger and like really go in and close him down. So none of them really did it. And Lask were able to get forward. The ball dropped off, maybe rather fortunately, into the path of Robert Zuhl, but he finished it really nicely. And overall, I don't think Salzburg really can have any complaints about losing this one 1-0. As you say, a second home defeat in succession, either side of the international break.
And both to Linz teams.
Both
as well.
To Linz teams, yeah. But this was the first one where I saw Umar Saleh especially was really giving a hard time to his fellow teammates, his Salzburg teammates, really sort of tearing strips off Luka Gornadua and just shouting at all the players. I think Alex Schlager had to come over and sort of calm him down and say, look, you know, we need to be a bit more constructive, because he was just like ripping into his teammates. So they're really struggling at the moment. They're in a tough spot and they don't appear to know how to get out of it. And then when you've got Champions League coming up in a couple of days, it's not going to get any easier.
The Champions League's definitely a worry, isn't it? Because they've got this doubleheader against Inter Milan now. And after that incredible game against Benfica, to lose, I think it was at home, wasn't it, to Real Sociedad? To lose that game means that they need to get something from these Inter games. And that's looking difficult. But I suppose the expectation with Salzburg is domestic dominance and see where we can get in Europe. And this domestic dominance is not there at the moment. And, you know, whenever Salzburg go through a rough patch like this, which doesn't happen so often, we ask that inevitable question, is this a crisis? So I'll pose it to you now, Tom. Is this a crisis?
I think by Salzburg's lofty standards that I alluded to earlier, yes, this is a crisis. It's ridiculous. I tweeted about it being ridiculous because it's two losses in a row at home in the league. That's not a great deal, is it? But this is a team who have genuine ambitions to not lose a single game in the league all season, full stop. And then you translate that to home games, and you say, well, definitely, even if they lose a couple of games in the league, maybe it's going to be one defeat in the whole season in the league. Definitely they're not a home defeat. So if they can't go unbeaten all season, and then they can't go unbeaten all season at home, you'd expect them certainly to only lose one game. Yeah, they only lost one game all season last season. I think that's a run that continues then in previous seasons. They hardly lost two. I don't remember them losing two games really, almost ever. So I think it actually is a crisis, and coupled with a weak performance in the Champions League. I mean, I don't want to criticise their Champions League Leistungen performances too much really, because they did win one of their two games so far. So it's hard to say that. But we were mentioning the team sheet. You know, you look at the starting 11 for Salzburg, and we asked some questions about the quality of that 11 at the start of the season. They began brilliantly, and then you could sort of forget. That maybe this squad doesn't have the experience or maybe the talent, the pure talent in the names from before. But I look at players like Capaldo, Amankwa, Gornadua, Simic. There's a lot of really good players in there. And some have been excellent this season. Samson Baidoo's been brilliant. Umar Saleh was a big loss when he was out. But I just wonder, with some of those players, they're being treated as starters. They're being treated as 90 minutes twice a week starters. And although I believe that a lot of those players will still go on to bigger and better things, and they can be great footballers in their own right, I wonder if my fears at the end of last season were the Salzburg players who are on their way out, Nicolas Seivalds, etc., are maybe a bit further along in their journey than the players who are coming in to replace them. And I think we are seeing that bearing fruit now. I do think that's actually proving to be true, in that they're asking a lot of players who maybe are still in need of development.
I think there's two sides to this, because looking at those names, I feel like, yes, they are missing some of the standout names of previous years. You mentioned Seivalt, Benjamin Sesko from last season as well. I felt like they were a little bit better than the rest of the team, and they were the ones that, for me, were sort of, you know...
The Leistungsträger.
Yeah, the key performers, really. But by the same token, you know, Salzburg have managed to repeatedly replace young players with other young players in recent years, and they've always done well. And at the start of each season, we ask that familiar question on the pod: will they be able to do it again? And will they be good enough to keep up this dominance? And at the moment, are we seeing signs that perhaps they might not be able to do that? Have they got a generation here that does fall a little bit short, especially when it's coincided with such a strong Sturm Graz team?
I've seen the New York fans popping out of the woodwork to say Struber sort of spoiled the legacy in New York, and now he's doing the same in Salzburg. I mean, I think it's too early to say that. It's still very early in the season in what's going to be a long battle, but I keep mentioning these mini things that go one way or the other. And I felt like when Sturm played really well at home against Salzburg and didn't win, that's like a mini thing that goes Salzburg's way. You know, they came away with a point instead of a defeat. But now these mini things are sort of going Sturm's way. This was one of them. It's only one weekend, but they came back to win. Salzburg went on to lose again. It's now two defeats. As I said, that's a rarity for Salzburg. And Sturm are leading by 4 points. Again, not in itself a massive task to overturn 4 points. But it is just a little thing that start, you know, these things start to tip in Sturm's favour. And normally, if you say there's sort of 10 of these moments over the course of a season, normally, as small as they are, maybe 8 of them would go Salzburg's way, 2 of them would go Sturm's way. And in the end, that just is enough to tip the balance as normal into Salzburg's favour. But you wonder if at the early stages of this season, most of them seem to be falling Sturm's way now.
Yeah, I think so. I think the 4-point lead is symbolic, because we've got such a long way to go this season. We've still got another, I think we still have another Sturm versus Salzburg game in the regular season, don't we? And then, of course, the points get halved, and then they'll be playing each other 2 times more, bar a complete disaster. And so it doesn't mean anything now. It's just the fact that it's a statement, because really Salzburg are always either slightly ahead or level on points. I can't remember a time in recent years where another team has been 4 points ahead of Salzburg, except maybe perhaps LASK in that time during the pandemic, and then they had the points deduction, didn't they? But it's an unfamiliar sight.
It definitely is. It's worth mentioning LASK as well in this, because they, right now, after that victory, are only 2 points behind Salzburg themselves, therefore 6 points off the top. So they've clawed themselves right back into this. I'm not saying right now that they're fully going to be in this title race if we do go on to get one, but right now it certainly looks like we will get one, and this weekend has only furthered that. You know, Sturm doing a really, really good job and putting the pressure on Salzburg. So it'll be very interesting to see them respond to this, because I don't remember them being, whatever their results have been like, I don't remember them being under this much pressure in a league campaign at any point of the season. Even in those last days, it was a bit different. You sort of knew LASK were doing well, Salzburg were doing well. You were just waiting for LASK's run to sort of fade. But we know from Sturm in the last couple of seasons, we know they're capable of holding on to this kind of level. I'm not going to say they're going to go unbeaten themselves throughout the year, but they've played everybody once now, and they are unbeaten. That in itself, a very good start. Can't wait to see where this one goes.
Yeah, it's the halfway stage of the regular season now, isn't it? And that usually is a pretty good indication of where respective teams are at. So I'm excited to see how this develops.
Yeah. Looking around the league table, we had a big clash at the bottom, Blau-Weiß Linz-Lustenau. Ultimately, ended up being a 0-0 Bor draw, so nothing really changed there. Lustenau came close to getting their first win of the season, but they weren't able to do it. Luckily for them, from their perspective, VSG Tirol were defeated as well. Austria Vienna winning 2-0 at the Tivoli. A little bit of an upturn for Austria Vienna, I feel. I feel like their results have picked up in recent weeks, but not, more importantly perhaps than their results, their performances have picked up. I feel like they might have turned a bit of a corner here, Austria Vienna, and they're sort of back in the hunt, back in the realistic hunt for the top six. Only 2 points behind Rapid right now.
Yeah, I think the ninth position sort of clouds it slightly, doesn't it? Because That seems like a very low place for such a historied, such a storied and such a tradition-steeped club, such a big club in Austrian football. But as you say, it is only 2 points. And so you do wonder. What I would say is that I don't think both Vienna clubs will get into the top six. I would be very surprised if that happened.
Big statement. One's going to miss out. Your money right now would be on?
I think Rapid just about have enough. If they don't have too many more catastrophes like today, I think they just about have enough.
The two teams just below the line right now also drew 0-0. Altach and Wolfsburg. It's Vietti in seventh, Altach in eighth. Altach had a goal ruled out. Nuhiu thought he'd scored with the foot. A rare non-headed goal by A.T. Nuhiu, but that was ruled out for handball in the build-up. So they drew 0-0. And what was the last game? Was that the last game?
That was the last game.
Oh, we've covered them all. Oh, yeah, VSK were already covered in their defeat. Not looking good for them. VSK just one win. Lustenau with no wins. So they are now well below Blau-Weiss Linz, who are 10th. The bottom two absolutely in a league of their own.
Yeah, we have to start calling them Austria Lustenau, don't we now?
Wow. They're on the Europe's winless page as another of the teams who haven't won. But my hometown, Cheltenham, got their first win of the season.
I thought that might get a mention today.
Yeah, why not? They got their first goal like last weekend and then their first win this weekend. So, yes, there we go. Some exciting news from my hometown, at least. Any other random football results you want to throw in before we wrap it up for part one here, Lee?
From the great nation of Austria, no.
but that implies you've got somewhere else, maybe something from The Sweeper that was really exciting.
Yeah, listen to our sister podcast, The Sweeper. We've just done an episode on San Marino getting a goal against Denmark, which was worthy of an emergency section itself. And there was a 9-5 in Czech Republic yesterday between Zlin and Mladá Boleslav. So, yeah. Tune in for the next episode to find out about that.
My favourite part about that 5-9 game, it was 5-9, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Not 9-5, yeah. It was, what, 3-1 in the second half. At some point in the second half, it was 3-1.
To the team that lost.
Who would have 5-9 as the full time on any betting slip? If somebody put a large amount of money on the 5-9 there, I'm calling it. Something's not quite right.
Yeah.
Right, we'll finish off with our random Mladá Boleslav story then and wrap up this Bundesliga report. And we'll be back in just a second to talk a little bit about the international break. Welcome back to this episode of the Other Bundesliga podcast. It's me, Tom Midler, joined by Lee Wingate in Rapid's emptying Allianz Stadion. We've enjoyed the game here. We've talked about that already. You've heard that. But what we haven't talked about is Austria, who have qualified for Euro 2024. It looked to be a pretty much foregone conclusion after their win against Sweden in the last international break. But they did get over the line, albeit not at the first opportunity. Simon and I were in the Ernst Happel Stadion for Austria 2, Belgium 3. And I thought Austria gave a good account of themselves. And then suddenly, after not being very clinical, a la Rapid, really, I suppose, after not being very clinical, they suddenly then found themselves 3 goals down. And it looked a bit doom and gloom. So I'm pleased that they fought back into the game at least and went pretty close to actually levelling at 3-3.
Yeah, I was keeping an eye on that on TV, and it was quite close towards the end. I thought, you know, maybe there's a chance. As it is, I don't think it's any great shame to lose to a team that's as good as Belgium. But I think Ralf Rangnick will have probably felt a little bit disappointed because he has such high standards for this team.
Yeah, I think some of the parallels with tonight's game here and Klagenfurt, really, if you put Belgium in the Klagenfurt position, sounds weird to do, but we love the Austrian Bundesliga. Why not? Let's do it. It was that efficiency. And I think I don't want to be too results-based. As we say this often, you know, the nature of the coverage of football gets so swayed by the final result. And so many people were so down about Austria's performance because they've been 3 down against Belgium. And I just thought, you know, on most days, if you play this game out right at this point, when it was Austria 0, Belgium 3, I thought, it's not going to be 3-0 on many occasions here. Belgium have been worked hard by Austria here, and they've got some real individual talents. I think it's Jeremy Doku who's just absolutely brilliant in that game. And like an individual moment of quality to just like rinse the defender and then finish off for 1-0. And then the other goals sort of on the breakaway. Not perfect from Austria, of course, like there's reasons to be critical. But at the same time, I thought, yeah, they don't normally score with all three of those breakaways. Or, you know, maybe at the Euros, at the tournaments, at that top level, sometimes you get punished like that. But on another day, easily could have been 1-0 Belgium, perhaps at that point. Austria themselves could and perhaps should have scored. They looked like they had a plan. They were sticking to it. They were pushing forward, trying to attack. And in a way, even though the game was sort of gone at 0-3, I wasn't surprised they got back into it. There was the red card. They forced their way back into the game. They got the goal from the penalty spot. They got the other goal first, finished really nicely into the corner. And I think, yeah, if you imagine that scenario when they weren't already 3-0 down, that easily could have then been them coming back to win 2-1 or to get a 2-2 draw or something. A reasonable result was definitely attainable with a performance at that level, I thought.
Yeah, I think so too. I didn't watch that game as closely as you. Because you were at the stadium, so I won't lend any sort of further judgment or comment to that. But I think the fact that they're there is what we wanted to see, because Austria actually haven't been at that many Euros, have they? But now, 2016, 2020 and 2024, just over the border in Germany. I know you probably want to talk about the game that actually clinched it. That was Azerbaijan.
Yes, away in Baku. I mean, the Belgium loss made me at least think, hey, do you know what? A performance like that will be able to sweep past this Azerbaijan team, hopefully. Because Azerbaijan, you know, it's not the same as Estonia. And Austria had a bit of problems. You know, they had a few problems against both of them in the home legs, actually. They didn't, like, blow either of the sides out of the water over 90 minutes. But I thought, OK, performance like that, we'll go to Azerbaijan, we'll get the job done. But my, oh my, that was a bit of a nail-biter. And it was a terrible game. It was an awful game of football. It was a horrible way to clinch it. And the only way you can come away happy with one of those is by getting a win. And the only way they managed it, I don't think they would have made the breakthrough if it wasn't for a direct free kick, hit an arm in the wall, Marcel Savic's a penalty, 1-0, and then the game just descended into chaos. Like the Azerbaijan players sort of lost their head. It was like players like kicking out a little bit, like rolling around a lot. It's really sort of the game was just like chopped up, the pitch was chopping up, like there's no flow. It was a horrible watch. And I was ill as well that day, so I'm just watching it, ill, just being like, oh, just win it 1-0. And then Azerbaijan, I don't know if you saw this, Lee, but they missed a massive chance at the end. A little bit of credit to Alexander Schlager, because Schlager did a kind of weird run out at the player, because it was like a 100% chance for Azerbaijan to equalise in stoppage time. And that would ultimately have denied Austria for a while the place at the Euros, so that would have been a bit frustrating. But Schlager like ran out, and then the guy fired wide from a massive chance. So Austria got a bit of a let off. But perhaps the biggest raised smile, other than the fact that Austria got the job done and qualified, was the Guido Burgstaller cameo that I promised that we'd mention earlier. What did you see of that?
I was trying to take a little bit of a break from football over the international break, because believe it or not, even we need one sometimes. But I did see the tweet that you put out, which was Guido Burgstaller is on for Austria. And then shortly afterwards, pretty much in the same screenshot, Guido Burgstaller is off for Austria.
Yes, it was, I think, a 12 and a half minute cameo. I think the referee was being a little pedantic, I have to say. I felt a bit sorry for him. The first one was for Azerbaijan were trying to take a free kick, I think, in the penalty area. Like the goalkeeper was putting the ball down for a free kick. But he had it in his hands, and maybe it was a goal kick. And he like did that thing where they throw it out and spin it. And Burgstaller was right there, and he sort of pointed at the referee. He's like, look, the ball is live. He's played it. The ball is live. I'm going to go and kick it. The ball is live. And he did go and do that, and then went to play it. And then the referee just immediately reached for the yellow card, which I thought, I mean, maybe he's got a point. Sort of technically, the ball could have been seen as being live. He sort of told the referee he was going to go and do it. You don't have to get a booking for that. And then the next one, it was only a few minutes later, it was just an aerial challenge, and he just went up and had his arm out. And I thought in the moment that it happened, I thought, he's going to get sent off here, isn't he? He's going to get sent off. And then it took a little while for him to sort of realise, and then the referee checked it back and was like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, yellow card for that, that's you, you're off. But I saw it in the second, I thought, he's going to go, isn't he? He's going to go. It was a fitting end to such an ugly, scrappy game.
Yeah, do you think that the way that they qualified, sort of, I suppose, limping over the line with that game in Azerbaijan, does it sort of dampen the euphoria that comes with qualification, or is the fact that we're there and it's been a great qualifying campaign, is that what prevails?
I think it's a good question, but I think any time when you actually successfully qualify directly for a tournament, you don't have to worry about playoffs, none of that. I think any time that happens, you have to just say, we have achieved our objectives. They could still win the group. Obviously, there were the terrible scenes in Belgium for the game later on between Belgium and Sweden that has been declared as a 1-1 draw at half time. It finished. yeah, obviously that's just an awful, awful scenario, and our thoughts are with the Swedish fans, everybody that was involved in what must have been an absolutely horrendous night in the stadium in Brussels. But yeah, rather strangely, that ended up then, understandably, probably sensibly, ended up being given 1-1 at half time. But to bring it back to obviously unimportant matters in comparison, Austria actually are now just, what, 1 point behind Belgium. So Belgium will probably still go on and win the group realistically. But look, Austria have still got, there's still another international round of fixtures left, and they're already at the Euros. Like, you basically can't do much better than that. And I look at Belgium, they also won 1-0 in Baku as well. Like, you've just got to take it. You've just got to look at the results and say pretty much all the games have been as they could have been. And then they weren't far away from getting a point off Belgium at home as well. Like, they've really done a good job. Even if that ugly game made us feel like, oh, they limped over the line. It's still over the line.
Yeah, I certainly feel a lot better, you know, with Ralf Rangnick in charge. It feels like a totally different environment around the team, a totally different way of sort of a relationship between the country and the team has changed a lot since the, well, we can call them dark days of Franco Foda, can't we? So it's going to be really great to see them at the tournament. And, you know, there was that game against Italy, the eventual winners at the last Euro, that could have turned out differently. Obviously it didn't, but it could have. And I'm excited to see how far they can go.
Yeah, me too. I said in that Belgian game, I really felt like they had a plan. It's like they're a nicer team to watch even when they lose, because you can see what they're trying to do, or you can see that they know what they're trying to do at least. And, you know, there's something out there that they're trying to execute. And that's, I think that just brings fans on side generally. If you watch it and you sort of understand, even if it's not going well, it's like, this is what they're doing. Can they do it? You hope that they can then. You get excited about the prospect of them maybe being able to do it. I think they beat Italy in that friendly not that long ago as well, didn't they, Austria? So they've got some good results against big teams. They've shown they can challenge those big sides. And I don't see why they wouldn't be excited to line up for the Euros and sort of try and give it a really good crack. It's really cool that it's in a neighbouring country. It's going to be so close. It should be easy for us to enjoy. But I had a chat with Seb Stafford-Bloor from The Athletic for his article on Ralf Rangnick and Austria qualifying for Euro 24. And that was, I think it's a really nice article about fans getting back on side. And I basically said that fans can be quite negative in Austria. They almost want Austria to lose so that when they do lose, they can say, yeah, see, you know, that's why I wasn't hopeful. That's why I didn't care about Austria. But the fans will get behind the team. They will get the Euro fever next summer, especially with it being Germany. And I'm really glad it's going to happen. It's going to be great for us on the other Bundesliga. It's going to be great to follow it, and we can go in without huge expectations, but with a bit of hope for an exciting summer.
I've got huge expectations.
What are your expectations? What was it, quarterfinal last time? Was it round of 16 last time? Maybe, hopefully, quarterfinals this time? It depends on the group, doesn't it?
It does depend on the draws, and in particular the round of 16 draw. But I think if they don't get through the group, it's a disaster. Considering the talent there and the fact that it's 24 teams and the, you know, you can go through in third place, I think that is a disaster for this new look Austria under Ralf Rangnick. Can't really say new look anymore, can we? But yeah, I think that then it's, you know, it's a very good tournament if you get to the quarterfinals. If you go out in the round of 16, okay, depends how that happens, I suppose.
Yeah, looking forward to the build up to that though. Obviously, a long way off yet, still another international break to come. But yeah, an Austria team to be a little bit excited about, which is nice. Moving back to the Bundesliga before we wrap it up for this pod. Thanks for your patience, by the way, everybody. We didn't do a pod last week because of the international break, Austria's game coming on that Monday night and everything. And then, like I said, I was ill, and we just thought, let's leave it. Wait till the Bundesliga's back. Bundesliga's back. It's been exciting this weekend. Sturm have opened up this 4-point lead. Anything you're looking forward to from the next couple of weekends, Lee?
Well, I want to see how Salzburg responds to that defeat today. They're at home to Altach next time out, and you would expect that to be a win, but you would have also expected the Blau-Weiss Linz and last games to be wins at home. So I'm interested to see how they bounce back from that. What about you?
Yeah, looking at next Sunday, that's quite exciting for me. Sturm against Austria-Vienna. So I don't want to say a resurgent Austria-Vienna, but certainly an Austria-Vienna on the up with joint top scorer Andreas Gruber. We should have mentioned actually Sinan Carvajna. You did mention that he's joint top scorer as well with 7, but he's got 5 assists as well. So on the scorer points tally, he's 5 ahead of everybody else, Sinan Carvajna. So he's going to be sold in winter for a big money move, I'm sure. But Klagenfurt have got VSK Tirol. So happy to see them in action again. But yeah, Sturm against Austria-Vienna. So Sturm back at home, and then Rapid against LASK on Sunday. Some big Sunday games that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, that Rapid one against this sort of resurgent LASK is going to be quite an interesting one. Back here as well. So maybe we'll come back next Sunday and record again here.
I hope we will. A few European games to cover in the meantime. So we'll have European action to talk about. I'm off to Berlin to go and cover Union Berlin. But we will, of course, be keeping an eye out for Salzburg, for Sturm, for LASK in their respective Champions League and Europa League ties as well. I'll keep my fingers crossed for the Austrian teams in Europe. I look forward to coming back next time.
I think so. Same here.
Very good. Yeah, if you've enjoyed this pod and you fancy buying us a beer, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/other Bundesliga and you can treat us to a couple of lovely beers to be enjoyed at the long haul. Thank you so much to everybody who's done that. A few of you have put your names on there and we really appreciate it. Some people have donated beers anonymously and we really appreciate those as well. So thanks very much for your support and we'll see you next time on the Other Bundesliga podcast. Goodbye. Oh, they've just turned the lights out at the Allianz Stadion. That timing is perfect.
There we go.
Well, we'll sign off with that. Good night from us.